welcome to another episode of the CSW Free to Believe Spotlight Series podcast on North Korea. This is the second part of our conversation with human rights activist and North Korean escapee, Timothy Cho. If you missed the first half, this one picks up right after he left off. So do go back to last week's episode and listen to that first, then come on back and finish up the conversation. So I hand you over to David Simpson, myself, and Timothy Cho.
In July, I had an opportunity to visit Auschwitz and concentration camp. I think 17 years of my life in the UK, and I have visited many places, but it was the first time a place where I visited and my full memory of trauma was coming back to me was Auschwitz camp. Starting of this tour, and when you walk through the entrance door and get into the concentration camp, probably one of the largest or the biggest graveyards I probably ever walked on, and where these prisoners arrived, Jewish people arrived, gave them shower, and moved on the gas chamber, gas poured through the chimney, and some of these little babies, same as my boys' ages or even younger, just born babies, even in mother's arm. All of them died just within half an hour by these chemical weapons. And the bodies were, you know, burning 24/7. And because of the staggered of these bodies, they even extended more of these places needed to burn the bodies, because they killed millions of people, the atrocity in that prison camp. And especially when I was seeing these underground prison cells, where the punished prisoners being killed in the underground prison cells, I think I saw exactly the same prison cell I experienced in North Korea. I saw in the Auschwitz prison camp. I tried to find the similar prison cell on Google anywhere, but I couldn't find it. Only I could be able to find the similar that I use as a PowerPoint slide. But I saw the exact place, and during I was visiting the Auschwitz concentration camp. It was in North Korea, underground prison cells. There were many. I wasn't sure how many exactly. There are hundreds of prisoners. Each prison cell had full of prisoners. Once you entered there, they tell you that you don't have names and you don't make eye contact, and you have numbers, and you call, and when you call prison guard, you have to use sir, something very specific words. And toilet is just next to you. It was years ago. But as a teenager, that what I experienced, what I saw, and what I had gone through, I think it would never erase my memory or will disappear. And the first day, I was so tired, I just wanted to sleep, but we didn't have enough space to lie down. And we were sleeping, sitting, and leaning on each other's back. And early in the morning, after a few hours of a nap, and I felt something was pressing me so heavily. The man on my back, who was leaning against my back, And he was dead. This was dead body was leaning against my back, but it was not just leaning on me, but it was pressing on me. It was really heavy. It seemed like he didn't have any feeling. It was normal, you know. When we are live, you can feel it, blood pressure. Our bodies are soft. You can pinch it. But when you're dead, no longer you can do that. They're like a stone. And we told the guard, so he's died. And he asked the people in our room to drag him out of the cell. His body dragged out of the cell and threw out the corridor. That picture still remains. I thought I was going to be killed like him. I was lucky, or God was there already through this suffering gone through. But I would even have asked him why then he didn't rescue other people than me, you know? And after a few days of investigation and beating and torture, I still have scars on my body. Well, so when I couldn't walk properly, they sent to me my grandmother's house, and I left behind all these prisoners and even those 17 prisoners who we were arrested together at the Mongolian border. I'm not sure. So far, if I haven't found anyone in my group since then, and probably many of them, most of them died or killed by now, all gone to prison camp. That where I experienced even the Auschwitz concentration camp, that's how political prisoners or whoever met Christians or went to church during their escape in China, their fate ending up prison camp, because that is a political crime in North Korea. And I was very lucky, and I survived from there, and I still don't know why they let me go to my grandmother's house. But I was being watched 24/7, and my grandmother helped me to escape to China again. She found someone, a lady, who was helping me to cross the border to China. She came all the way to cross the border to China with me. And it was a rain season. It was in August in 2004. And water was very deep. As I couldn't walk properly, I was holding the plastic containers floating. And so she was helping me. But we both was drawn into water a few times. But she would still try to encourage me that you have to survive. So we managed to cross the border a second time and arrived in China, knock on a stranger's door, and they could easily report us to Chinese police, and they would get compensation from Chinese government otherwise. But this Chinese citizen lived on the border area. They provided us food, shelter, and telephone so that we were able to move to the next place. But second time again, then I was arrested when I entered the American school in Shanghai. That's where I had this 8 North Korean refugees with me, so 9 of us. We hoped that Chinese American school in Shanghai could help us get out from China safely. And so we illegally crossed over the fence of the school and went inside the school with a paper that written, "We are North Korean refugees, please help us." But it was a public school, they couldn't do anything for us. Soon Chinese police arrived and forcibly drugged us and put us into police vans, and school kids were standing there watching us in tears. And eventually we ended up in Shanghai International Prison. So this was my experience of 4 times imprisoned, since 3 times in China and 1 time in North Korea. I mean, each prison cell I experienced wasn't that long, but 1 day in prison is like 1 year or 10 year. If you ever asked or meet anyone who actually experienced a prison in the UK, any other part of the world, I think they would have had the same feeling. Being in a prison 1 day is like is 1 year. And in Shanghai prison, I didn't have any hope. Chinese told me that we would be sent back to North Korea. There was no doubt, which usually happens. China's repatriated North Korean refugees over the past decade. It's kind of feeling you're waiting for your death. And I went to American school, and I would be executed this time if I went back to North Korea. And I make this joke with every time I meet with American people. Each time I meet someone from America, I get death penalty in North Korea. So how many times I have been executed or given death penalty in North Korea if I say arrested. Desperate, but still I was hoping something, if there's any hope. I was crying every night, not eating well. And in the meantime, I had an inmate in my room, all from different countries. But one guy came to me, approached me, and he introduced himself. He was a South Korean. But he looked quite scary. And he said he was a gangster, and he was in that prison. Because we speak the same language, at least I was able to communicate with him. And every time when I was investigated by Chinese police, he came along with me because he spoke English. And so one of the inmates who spoke English, but he also spoke Chinese. So my translation, I spoke in Korean, the South Korean guy spoke in English, and this English guy spoke in Chinese. Every time we had investigation, it was really so funny. But then this gangster, South Korean guy, and he brought something with him when I was crying, and he asked me, "Have you ever seen this book?" And this was the Bible. He had a small Bible reading in prison. What kind of gangster reading a Bible, and in a prison? It's so bizarre, you know? Re very rare. And he asked me, and I said, "I saw this book." And I still felt, you know, it was a kind of a curse, you know, I didn't want to touch it. But then he said to me, "Well, you have some time in prison. You could read this book." So he actually gave me a number of magazines, newspapers that he was reading, Korean magazine newspaper. When I read them all, there's only one book left. It was the Bible. I started reading it. And it was very old Bible. But when I first started reading it, because I had time, I wanted to consume time, you know, without boring. But it was a book fascinating. It was a book fascinating. It was moving my feeling and heart, everything. But then at the same time, when this gangster told me, "Perhaps you could pray to God for your survival. If God exists in this world, you never know." And I looked at him with strange eyes. I just told him I would be sent back to North Korea and killed. He even heard from Chinese police. And then he was telling me to God and telling me and to pray to God for my own survival. It was a very strange moment how I reacted to him that time. But then thinking of that, you have nothing to do. You're just waiting for your death when you come back to North Korea. So why not? I made the quick decision to pray to God. I didn't know how to pray. So I asked the gangster, "How do you pray?" And he said to me, "You just say amen at the end of your wishes." This was how he taught me how to pray to God. And my first sentence, my first prayer that moment was, "God, I don't want to be killed. God, I don't want to go back to North Korea. God, I want to get out from this prison." So all my prayers I had was what I needed that moment of desperation. When I had no hope, when I felt I was scared in that prison cell, but how I would be killed, especially your own experience of you experience how people were killed in North Korea or executed, all this fear, and there was nothing else I could do, but I produced the sentence of my prayers, and I said amen at the end of it. I prayed so many times each day, and this was the only hope, if I say, this was the only expectation I could have in that prison cell. Otherwise, talking to this gangster, he always told me something, his experience, how he was being a gangster, how he fought, these things. But nothing, any interesting stories could come to me during that desperation and in fear of anxieties, but only the prayer. It was my communication. I could find comfort and peace that moment. But what strange thing also happened was that these inmates, I had a number of international inmates in my prison cell. All these inmates said, "Timothy, we're going to pray for you from now on." And each time when they prayed, they turn around. The funny thing was that all they had a different religion. The American student, he said he was a Christian. And a Colombian guy, he said he was a Catholic. Japanese professor said that he had his own religion. And Chinese guy said he was a Buddhist. Malaysian guy said he was a Muslim. And the South Korean gangster. So all these men I had in my cell, they had a different religion. But they will pray for me with their religion. If God wanted to bring a te make a produce a testimony, that's all way all that's all I could interpret in this way, how I ended up with these men, and they were praying for me with their own religion. It was a one God, probably we were praying for all together that moment. Nothing happened. Weeks and weeks I was praying and praying and praying and crying and crying, crying. I was still hoping there was all of a sudden this prison gate might be opened and I could walk out as a free man. That's all I imagined. But it was nothing happening. And I even told the gangster, "God doesn't exist. He lied to me." In tears, I shouted at him, and he didn't say anything. He was just watching my anger. And so I turned into a different way of prayers. And I told the asked God, "If you really, really exist in this world, you give me my freedom. Then in return, I give my whole life to you." But I told him if I was sent back to North Korea and killed, I was going to deny your existence. And these words have been my testimony since that year I was in Shanghai prison. And over the past years, I traveled over 35 countries, spoke, testified millions of people the same testimony. Never thought that would become my testimony. And so here I testify once again to his work. And two men visited me in the prison. I thought they were from North Korean embassy. When I went outside the prison, these two men were smiling at me from far away distance. It was a beautiful smile. And it was one South Korean diplomat. The other guy was a Westerner. I wasn't sure which country where he came from. But they said to me, "Timothy, you're very lucky. China made very unusual decision to deport me and my group to the Philippines. with diplomatic passport. I didn't even know what passport was exactly, because we born with our passport living in North Korea. You never expect to leave the country. But you think of in general, diplomatic passports are for diplomats or exchangeable prisoners or important people. We were not valued in dealing of any prisoners exchange, or when we were not even count being counted as a human being that moment, where even we were killed, no one would have asked about where our about. And this was very shocking moment to hear from these diplomats. And they also said to me and the group, "You're very lucky how many government, how many diplomats, and how many people involved in this negotiation to get you guys out of the prison." And one of them was, and even the I'm a school student, this Shanghai American school student where we were arrested. There's a young student who wrote an email to a journalist in her tears, asked her to do something. Then school made a statement follow with this, and so that journalist and the international media join in this campaign, and human rights Christian groups join the campaign. And all of this happened in the desperate prayer and in that prison cell. So that's how the consequence of the good decision to go to the Philippines, step into freedom soil, and it came to happen. When I came back to prison cell, I shared my story with South Korean gangster and my inmate, and gangster was crying. I first time I saw the gangster man was in tears, and all these men, they were praying for me again and giving thanks to God, and they said we should have a party. What do you have in the prison cell? What kind of party you could have? But these men had a prison bank account, so they regularly were able to buy items of a sweet and biscuits, milk powder, and which they even bought extra items for me. Each one of them going around and looked after me. Seriously, they were my brothers, these criminals to me. And so we put all the snacks out on the table, and but we didn't have champagne. However, we had the milk, so we tossed to the milk to celebrate my freedom, enjoying these snacks. I don't know where these guys are now, but hopefully someday I could meet them, or even one of them, give thanks to them. But it was the most expensive party I ever had, probably never able to have even in the future. As I walked out of the prison cell, these men were waving at me, and "Live where when you go to free country." So we headed to Shanghai airport, got on the plane, and when we arrived at the Manila airport, Filipinos police were protecting us. And there we moved on to second flight. It was the first class flight was waiting for us. And the South Korean, these two diplomats told us, your life perhaps indebted to many, so you must live well and have a happy life, have many children." That's what these diplomats told me. And so I finally was able to come to UK in 2008 as a free man. If you, I like to talk about what is a miracle. And I have seen number of miracles in my life, particularly particular how I eventually walked out of the prison cell. But if I saw that miracle, how it happened, it was happened through the man and woman next to me. Many kids died of starvation, and I could have been one of them after my parents left. But other friends died. I wasn't died. One friend told me, I remember one of my homeless friends told me, "Timothy, you are not a good stealer because you have to steal food to survive." So they actually gave me the most easy job always. They were stealing food. They kicked the food selling on the plate or containers. Then they asked him to collect it. And even that collecting food, I was not always good at it. And I would have been died of starvation if I didn't have these friends. And I would have been died if I didn't have my grandmother, who didn't take who kindly took me in, or the missionary guy I met, or among those 17 of us. And during my first escape, we were on the bus 4 days, handcuffed, and our legs were tied up. There was one lady, North Korean lady, who kept on hiding bread and brought it to me. And she told me that you have to survive from here, and you have to tell the story to outside. And the gangster, inmate, schoolgirl, diplomat, I think the miracle performs and happens through the creation, and where God has created, and the man and woman he created, and he knows how to perform miracles through his creations. So because of that hope, what I experienced during the darkest moment, and that's why I still have a hope. Hope for what? For those our persecuted brothers and sisters. Persecution is getting worse and worse. Your organization is one of them working hard for persecuted brothers and sisters across the world, and including my home country, North Korea, where I was born. But persecution may happen, or suffering may happen. We often ask why God is not there when we are being suffered. However, from my own experience, my own view, if I didn't go through experience of suffering and darkness, I don't know if I ever came to God like who I am today. And I was seeking him in my desperation. So if you ask me, why am I so confident in speaking on behalf of God? Because I saw the miracle. It was just one man's life of me. But that one man who I become as an activist today share and his testimony. But it is also in our history of, and there are many, many testimonies. I'm sure your organization have met so many of these activist testimonies who have, even during challenging time, suffering moment, and even in front of atrocities, killing, torture, executions. But one thing, what significantly I learned through this part of it, it is our faith, and how in the darkest moment, how it generated my faith, the faith in God, and I felt there is hope. And that same hope, and that our forefathers had, And because of the hope, we sacrifice our lives for freedom. And if we don't have this freedom, we expect the persecution comes in countries and nations, ethnic groups. And this was one of the reasons why men and women fought hard for our freedom, for this country, and the freedom world we have today. North Korea, over the past 78 years, having no freedom and no churches. People cannot even come to God because they persecuted. And everything is composed and actively happens in North Korea's underground churches. That's the only thing can happen. But even that part is flourishing in North Korea. And people come to, they don't have missionaries that we can go into that country. But the evangelism, finding love, faith, and praying. And within that, one of the hardest environment of the country, life and death, you have to choose. But there are still our brothers and sisters who worship God, who pray for us, who pray for themselves. So faith will never ever be destroyed or executed. That remains the legacy of an inhuman flourish and human and this is my exciting part of my journey. No longer, well, I mean, of course, I experienced it between life and death until this age of my life. And what is left in my life, what I need to do is continue to testify to the miracle part of what it happens still today and tomorrow. And also my people in North Korea, they are deserved to have the same freedom you and I can enjoy in Britain and other parts of the democratic world. And I think that is a remaining part of the fight.
Timothy, thank you so much for sharing your incredible story with us. I'm struck by how your life in North Korea was a life of such isolation, and that you were alone as a teenager. You had to survive yourself on the street. But your story is punctuated by kindness, that your grandmother was there to help you. The schoolgirl sent the email. The missionary helped give you some bread. Even the Korean gangster bought you milk, cookies, and gave you a Bible. That they were your story of isolation, loneliness, was punctuated by people who showed you love and who showed you kindness. And those were sort of a window into a world beyond North Korea's walls. That is a world where there's kindness, a world where there's opportunity, a world where there's hope, and a world where there's people that care. And there's a world where people want to put a hand out to be in solidarity with those that are suffering. So I'm always struck when I hear your story about the your resilience, your optimism, your hope, and your sort of tireless advocacy for the people of North Korea. So, Timothy, it's always a pleasure and an honor to hear your tears, hear your story, and get a little window into what life is like in North Korea. So thank you so much for sharing that with us and sharing that with our listeners. It's always a pleasure to hear from you.
Well, thank you. Let's thank you for what you guys are also doing, this tireless work and advocacy. Sometimes we kept on asking, how long do we have to do it? And when do we see the freedom of these countries? But I think the freedom is already in our heart. And we'll keep it up, this work, and eventually the love champions, because not persecution, darkness, and war able to champion, because that's dark side of fight. But because of dark, we have light and justice. And I love to talk of these things. And they're all in my heart and my own experience. And God bless you and your important work. And I am so looking forward to one day you and I together will travel to North Korea and declare freedom on this most persecuted and darkest land in the 21st century. I kept on saying to my wife, I can't wait to take my children to my hometown or show them around the Pyongyang, or how many times I mentioned or said to a member of parliament that I my work in parliament. And it feels sometimes I say them, I can't wait to show you guys around North Korea, beautiful mountains, beautiful country, food, and also comparable North Korean whiskey with Scottish whiskey. And that's kind of sometimes it's a kind of in a way of a joke, but it never be joke when it comes out from my heart. Hope is not something is not it can be tangible, intangible, but hope is that you and I talk about, you and I feel it, you and I have family dining together, or even that I may able to meet those of my friends who I used to go to school. This is not a big hope. It is a hope, something in our general life on a daily basis. Or even I don't have pictures from my childhood life in North Korea. One day, whether I can collect some of these pictures from these friends who I went to school together. Or some of these boys I went to school, a number of them died after they joined the army and come back home with malnutrition. Or the nine churches we used to have in Pyongyang, but most of them now have Kim family's giant statues. So that flippable happens, having churches there, bring it back so people can walk in the church holding Bible. No one can stop them. That free expression, free dome of faith, walk into church, or you travel freely, or maybe someday they will have a concrete road that you can drive between Seoul and Pyongyang and without stopping them. And the most that I want to see when these families who can re have reunion and sit down together and have dinner and forget that moment of what suffering and hardship, perseverance they had, but that moment of having a meal together and talk about laugh, that is probably hope. And that hope still remains not just in my heart, all North Korean escapees who are, we have in some in the UK and in South Korea, all across the world, and 20 millions of families between South and North Korea still separated. And I can't wait that, to see that moment of it, and two Koreas become one. No one can stop them to drive from Seoul to Pyongyang and Pyongyang to Seoul. There was only one ambassador who has been appointed in these both countries, our British, former British ambassador to North Korea, Ambassador Colin Crooks, who was the ambassador to DPRK and who is now ambassador to Seoul. Maybe he should more talk about this, what this hope between that one united Korea no longer the division has it there. And I'm sure God will give us wisdom, discernment, directions, love, and such decisions of this continue with keeping up the good work.
Tim, thank you so much for your time. It's a real privilege and a real honor. Thank you. So, Kiri, it's a powerful
story. What were some of your reflections having heard it, heard it a few weeks before, but now hearing it again and some of those added details like you mentioned?
So much to think of there, but I was really struck by what Timothy said about when the elder Kim had died, and just that sense of grief of losing a god, and combing the mountainsides looking for flowers, and just that sense of real loss, and then that kind of juxtaposed with he's obviously since become a Christian and come to faith, and I guess just the contrast between worshipping this human being as a god and then finding his own faith later, I thought was really striking. But also it showed the grip that the Kim family has over culture in North Korea. And when he talked about the information flows and, getting information into North Korea as key to kind of opening up people's minds, it just really brought that home for me. What about you?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting thing that I was thinking about as well is the it's so difficult when talking about North Korea to not talk about the Kim family. That it's such a dominant and understandably, a dominant kind of topic when it comes to North Korea, and clearly was so dominant in their lives, growing up, and such a dominant figure to even say to the point of being a god. I thought it was interesting is Timothy seems to be suggesting that for newer generations, it's the South Korean dramas, it's the K-pop that, and all that kind of stuff that are kind of that have worn away the and kind of lead to the desire to flee. But for him, it was the famine, or for his father's generation, and then for his generation, it was the famine that began to sort of undermine the trust that was being placed in the Kim family, and then for him. It was then not being able to continue to live his life in the ways he was expecting. And I just think that's really, a really fascinating kind of bit by bit unraveling of that grip. However, it doesn't seem to have happened with everybody. So it's, really, really fascinating. But as I said, that kind of the Kim family becomes kind of the object of our fascination, I think, in the West a lot of the time. And we, as a year ago published a report called We Cannot Look Away. And part of that report, I feel, was to sort of say, yes, everything going on with the Kim family is really important for us to focus on. And we often focus on security and nuclear proliferation and all of that. But there are human beings going through daily struggles that are also really important for us to focus on. And I think Timothy's story really highlighted that for me. Highlighted the complexity and the nuance of the human reality in North Korea. He talks about his friend when he was at school who had eaten the grass and was poisoned, and the kind of the school going over there and trying to help out and bringing food that must have cost them quite a lot, in terms of their material resources to help their friend out. And yet the humanity that kind of comes through, I thought was just really, really powerful. And I was also, I think, something I wanted to highlight as well during that is what he said about international aid, and the need to provide not just food and international assistance that way, but also seeds. And we were really privileged. Last year I was in South Korea with David. And Scott, our CEO, and we met a man called Timothy Peters, and he runs this thing called Helping Hands Korea. And we were privileged to kind of be at one of his meetings on a Tuesday where you pack seeds that get kind of taken into North Korea. And it was just this you could see this sort of power or the potential for the power of like handing over things that can sustain life. But then for me as a Christian, it almost felt like this wonderful metaphor for prayer was it this kind of packing these seeds, putting them into these bags, and kind of just sending them off in this kind of faith and hope that they reach where they need to reach and they provide what they need to provide. So yeah, those are some of the things that I was sort of thinking about off the bat, and just the courage, the sheer courage of Timothy to keep going, but also the kindness that he experienced from others along that journey, at the
Yes,
same
the daisy chain of kindnesses and just those little, not little, because they were significant moments in which people just helped. And I think when you're faced with these big issues like the situation in North Korea, it's people often sort of get bowled back and think, oh, it's so big, what can I do? But there's little things that we can all do that just help people along, just help the situation along.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think at this point, even at the beginning of the series, I'd want to encourage listeners that, it is difficult to know how can I respond? How can I respond? I can't. I don't know anybody who's working on this, so I don't know how I can get involved. But I do think prayer, and that's something that at CSW we really believe in, is that prayer is in the same way as I was packing those seeds and sending them off, that prayer is like packing those seeds and sending them off and carrying people through, regardless of whether they believe in the object of your prayers, but just praying for people from North Korea, praying for the country, praying for things to open up, praying for peace, and praying for the injustices to go away, and for something good and true and beautiful to rise up from within. I think that's actually a really powerful thing that can be done, and an action that can be taken. So even as we begin this series, and we'll go and find out more and more, and go deeper and deeper into these issues, I think encouraging people to begin from that place of praying and offering that as an action,
Absolutely. I think one of the things that Timothy said that really struck me was his hope that one day he'd take his children to see his hometown. And the challenge may be a bit with North Korea, but so is the hope. And I think praying into that and into that vision of a time when North Koreans can return home and reunite their families, I think would be really important, really special.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Kiri. It's been good to chat. It was great to hear Timothy's story, and we'll look forward to seeing everybody on the next episode.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the CSW Free to Believe podcast. CSW is a Christian human rights organization advocating for freedom of religion or belief. As Christians, we stand with everyone facing injustice because of their religion or belief. Our work, including this podcast, exists because of the generosity of our supporters just like you. If you're interested in finding out more or making a donation, go to csw.org.uk. You can help us grow this work and help it become a resource highlighting and amplifying the voices of those who suffer as a result of their religion or belief by sharing it with your friends or by leaving a 5-star review in whichever podcast catcher you're currently listening to.